Hello everyone and welcome to this webinar. I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21 and Info Climate Action Forum. And today we're going to look at something that's becoming more and more apparent. As climate change gets more of an emergency, scientists are beginning to speak up, medics are beginning to speak up, and they're beginning to make their voices heard in a way they haven't previously. And we've got two of those medics with us today, David McCulvey and Maggie Fay. And not only have they spoken up, because in some trusts, many people are speaking up about it becoming more sustainable, but they believe direct action was important. And they were two of the medics that stood outside of JP Morgan a couple of weeks ago and cracked a window because they thought JP Morgan was cracking up the world in terms of climate change. So we're going to talk to them about that, about climate change and you know, whether civil disobedience is a way we must go or whether it will alienate people. But first, maybe you could tell us each just a little briefly bit about your background in your profession. So Maggie, would you like to start on that?
Yeah, sure. My name's Maggie. I am a dementia specialist nurse. I work in the community in a very rural area. And for about 20 years before that, I worked in hospices as a practice educator and a specialist palliative care nurse.
And David?
So yeah, I have got a general practice background, although I've worked abroad in Tanzania and Africa. I've worked in public health. And I'm now sort of semi-retired, taking retirement at my normal retirement age, but I might have gone on working had it been appropriate, but I just felt that the climate emergency was such a massive issue that I decided to make some more space for that. So that's where I'm at, yeah. And Francis, just to say, in theory, because of the, we've been released under investigation because of the case, so it's, we allegedly broke the windows, so that's the common parlance of it. We've not been convicted of that.
Has did I say convicted? I am going ahead.
We're not denying there's a picture of us standing in front of the window.
Okay, well, let's start off, Maggie. I mean, what has inspired your interest about climate change?
I think it's because I grew up in a very rural community. And I could see that the countryside around me as the years have gone on has changed. There are no, you know, there's no butterflies around. There's no insects. Landscape's pretty barren and bare. So there's that bit of me that's a bit of a country girl, I suppose. And, you know, you can see that things are growing differently. The seasons are changing. But above all, it was really the humanitarian and the health aspects of climate change and the suffering that has brought and continues to bring and will continue to bring. And as a nurse, that's my duty of care to do something about that. So that's what's brought me in.
And David, I mean, being a medic yourself, being a GP, has that made you realise perhaps more than many people that the climate emergency is also a public health emergency?
You know, Francis, I was talking at a Extinction Rebellion 3.5 talk yesterday, in fact, and I was reflecting on that and what is it that's brought me to where I am? And so I mentioned that we were in Tanzania in the 90s. We spent 6.5 years there. And we lived through a couple of years where there were famines. And so, when you've faced crop failure in a subsistence farming population face on, you realize the impact of it. And so when we came back from Tanzania, we were involved in, maybe poverty history on drop debt and fair trade and all the rest, and just trying to do our bit. But I think it was in 2005, there was a picture of Mount Kilimanjaro without any snow on the top. And I don't know, you know, Kilimanjaro is this iconic volcanic mountain and the African plain rising up above the clouds with snow on the top. So the picture of it without snow on the top was just this alarm bell for my wife and I that, whoa, if that's happening on the top of the hill, what's happening on the plain to the people that we knew about? And I think that's to me and captures my concern, my deep concern. I, you know, as a Christian faith, God's got a real concern for the poor. And when we were there, we were just so aware that the when you've got a famine situation, it's the well-off, it's the educated people that move. The people that don't move are the really poor people. So when we talk about immigration and people moving, you know, because of climate change, it's going to be the able people that move. The really people at the bottom of the pile are not going to move, and they're going to be the ones that are going to be hammered. So this is the drive. It's, you know, it's just, you know, it's devastating, and that's that climate justice issue that is a driver for me, as well as seeing giraffes dying.
Yeah, I mean, the climate justice issue is a really, really important one. And I mean, the trouble when you talk about climate change, certainly in the past, it seems too abstract to some people, like it's something that's going to happen in the future, whereas we know it's happening now. Maggie, I mean, do you think that concentrating and looking at the public health impacts actually really brings it home to people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think particularly when you align it with an event like today, it's hot. We're in our second heat wave. So people can absolutely see the consequences of climate change. I think the introduction of zoonotic diseases, so diseases that pass from animals to humans. So we've seen that was COVID. You know, that's a whole host of other diseases. We see the effects of heat, of pollution. We're going to see, as David said, people moving. You know, we're going to see famine. It's already there, but it's going to increase. But I think people think, oh, it's happening elsewhere, maybe some other time. But actually, in terms of impacts on my patients, who are people living with dementia, it's happening to them today. You know, I've just left somebody who's dehydrated, who's gone into urine retention. I've had two patients go in into hospital with heat-related diseases in the last 4 weeks. So this is happening now. It's not abstract.
No, it's not abstract at all. But I mean, David, when you look at the health service, I mean, I've talked to quite a lot of people, and they're doing things in the health service. They're trying to make it more sustainable. They're trying to make it more green. But in a way, you think that's not enough. We've got to confront the causes of climate change. I mean, that's a part of the motivation behind what you do, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, it was interesting in our Conservative Party leadership, there was this minor interlude where they were asked, what can people do for climate change? And that's all they've talked about in climate change, which is bizarre. It's about individuals. So yes, individual action matters. You know, two big ones are plant-based diet and not flying. Those are the real big, big hits that people can do. But it's got to be organizational level. So I know that, I mean, I'm working at Greater Manchester level, trying to work out how we can make more sustainable primary care, changing people away from meter dose inhalers, things like that, looking at energy usage. But even that's not going to get us there. We need government level stuff and government level policy things. And so this is really where it's got to happen. Without that, we are never going to get there. And so, yeah, we've got to do it. It's we are duty bound as doctors to protect the health of the population. And I'm sorry to say that this is not going the right direction at the minute. And our government is causing more investment in new fossil fuel extraction. So basically, this is new stuff that's going on, and it's going to put us well over 1.5, which puts us into difficult territory with climate change. Yeah.
And Maggie, is it in a way the concentration on fossil fuels in saying we've got to stop emissions something that you think is now, you know, prime thing we must concentrate on?
Yeah, it should have been 30 years ago, but because of the lobbying by the fossil fuel industry, that didn't happen. They had the science, and we've known that for, I think, 40 years, actually. So yes, it has to stop. It has, you know, we need to stop investing in new fossil fuels now, immediately. You know, this is here. It's a red alert. Let's be absolutely clear about that.
But it's a major challenge, isn't it, David? Because I gather that that in the 5 years since 2015, we've seen many banks invest in fossil fuels, £3.8 trillion, and nearly half of that went to extracting more fossil fuels. And tackling that is really, really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. Maggie's, highlighted there the new stuff. You've highlighted the investment. We've got this business as usual mentality that's running between the banks funding fossil fuels. The fossil fuels, are in cahoots with the media and the politicians, and it's almost like the four of them are wrapped up into this. This network of power-based business as usual, and wanting to get the best return for investors and all that kind of stuff. And I guess the banks are saying, well, if we go down, then the government, you'll have to bail us out, and we'll go down if the fossil fuel goes down, and it's all mixed up. And somehow we need to break that business as usual mentality that is quite frankly taking us into catastrophe. So it's very much the banks are major problems. They are continuing to invest. And they paint this picture that they're doing green stuff, that they're investing in new technologies. Well, how can you say we're being green with one hand when you are actively putting billions into new fossil fuel investment? And there are a whole bunch of banks. There's this lovely report in Banking on Climate Chaos. Quite clear in that report, huge investment going on and still going on. So we've been very concerned about that. We as Doctors for Exile, we've been down at JP Morgan, which is the number one investor in fossil fuels. We've been hammering at their door for quite a while. We've had a number of actions against them, some more fun than others. We joined their corporate challenge race. We've also been outside their building where we're giving out leaflets in a very non-confrontational way. We've done another action where we did it more with a lot of people there. Yeah, we've done a load of stuff, and basically we're not getting through. So that's took us to our recent action.
Yeah, and I mean JP Morgan is a major bank, I know, when it comes to investing in fossil fuel. So you made a statement a couple of weeks ago about that, didn't you, Maggie, when you were outside and you took the action you did. Now, that that must have taken a lot of courage. How did you manage to get the courage to do that? And what did you do?
I think the thing about taking action is that it feels better than living with an existential anxiety that can feel overwhelming. So I think that's the first thing. It is frightening. I've always been a rule follower. I'm not a rule breaker by nature. So, but I think for me, I had to think about my duty of care to my patients. And I follow the Nursing Midwifery Code of Conduct. And that says that I must act without delay if I see a threat to public health or public safety. Now, the continued investment in fossil fuels is exactly that. And the climate emergency is exactly that. So I have to act. So I think it's a bit like any other situation we face as healthcare professionals. You might feel panicked and frightened on the inside, but you don't let that show. And you try and keep that under control. And actually, when we were there and breaking the glass, it was fine, because the people I did this with, we have a very trusting relationship, and we know each other, so it felt okay. It felt like the right thing to do, and it felt very calm, but there was no other way to get ourselves heard. And I think David said It felt like we were a mosquito buzzing in JP Morgan's ear, and then somebody else who took part in the action said, you know what, that mosquito's now got dengue fever and it's hitting these guys. And I thought that was fabulous. And I thought, actually, you know what, even though we're little small, we're really small, we can have some impact here. So yeah, it was all fine. It was calm. And it's, you know, it's it felt, you know, if you know it's the right thing to do, then I think it feels okay. And we'd done a lot of research beforehand. Well, I was going to discussion and research. Yeah,
I was going to ask you about that, David. I mean, was it planned well in advance, or and did you in that planning think, right, there's going to be a red alert, there's going to be 40 degrees temperature, and this really will make the point very strongly?
I think that we, as a group, had been ready to take another step in our journey. I think the fact that the you know, the heat wave was coming the first time in Britain, the temperatures were getting to that, you know, level one heat wave, and it just seemed that this was the appropriate moment to do it. So we did a lot of planning in the week before that, to be fair, and but we felt that we covered the bases. We made sure that we were planning something that was safe. So we went on a Sunday morning, early on a Sunday morning, when nobody else was around, when there no staff members were around. We made sure the public stayed well away. We had posters to explain what we were doing, and we, as soon as we started our activity, we called the police to inform them of that. And once we'd broken the windows, we sat down to accept responsibility. And this is a very fundamental thing about nonviolent direct action, is that you do it as in as nonviolent a way as possible, which is what we tried to do, without people around, without aggression, in a peaceful way, as Maggie was saying, peaceful way. And then, and to be honest, before we went to that thing, we met before we met to Canary Wharf, I was feeling, I don't know if I could go through with it. But there's something, like Maggie was saying, you draw deep on that moment of, actually, this is something that is far bigger than me, and I've got to walk through with this. And so you're going there, and so it was done in a nonviolent way, drawing deep on those deep waters of your commitment. And then accepting accountability for it. And that's nonviolent direct action, is you accept the responsibility, and in a way you're making yourself vulnerable. And I start to think that there's something about the power of vulnerability that we've forgotten, and the power of vulnerability going into the situation is really powerful, and being ready to accept that responsibility. Well, so yes, we're accepting responsibility.
Well, I think you both showed a great deal of courage in doing that. And I think a lot of people would find it very difficult to do themselves. I read that one of you said, Maggie, is that when a patient gets sick, the first thing you do is stop the harm. There's no point in administering an antidote to a patient or someone is still pumping poison into their body. Now, that sounds like a strong medical case, but do you think the general public sees it that way?
Yeah, that was one of our colleagues who was there with us who said that. He's a GP. He's absolutely right. I don't think the public necessarily have seen the harm done by fossil fuels. I think there's a very strong lobbying around that, but I think they're getting it now. I think people are seeing the effects of the climate emergency, and they are seeing the health effects. But I think we need to be very clear that, you know, a lot of these individual actions about not flying, taking a plant-based diet, as great as they are, it's also incumbent upon government to take a lead on this. And we've seen government do that. So I think if the government took a lead on it, then the public would see more clearly what the picture is. I don't think the public are getting an honest picture about what is the biggest threat to public health that we have faced ever.
Well, I mean, that's quite interesting. And I mean, David, I mean, what Maggie's saying is that, governments are not, or our democracy is not good enough to be able to get over the emergency of climate change and to take the necessary action. And they have been delaying for years, parties of both colours. I mean, in those circumstances, especially when we have an electoral system where the party that wins doesn't necessarily have a majority because first past the post, when we're in such an emergency, do you think civil disobedience is necessary in a democracy?
So civil disobedience, it's been likened, my wife says it's like the immune system of society. Yeah. So we something's happening, and the body goes along, and it's only when something is really wrong that your immune system kicks off. And to be fair, that seems to be a very good analogy, that this is the immune system saying, "Way, we're out of kilter here." And I think that that's really important, because it has to break into that moment. And nonviolent direct action doesn't seem to be another way. I've thought. How do you break the system as normal? So you, as Maggie was saying, I think there was a survey recently, 80% of the people in Britain are worried about climate change. So everybody now gets that it's a problem. I don't know that they get how serious it is, and I don't know if they get how to bring about change, and they still think it's individual change. So this is something about saying this is really important. We've got to do nonviolent direct action to get through the public, but B, get through the corporations.
I mean, the corporations is a big issue, isn't it? Because it's not just government, and you've got corporations that, in some cases, are bigger than many, many governments, and they're the ones that are actually taking action, which is causing the position we're in today. I mean, have you thought, Maggie, what are the possible actions you can take? Is it very frustrating when democracy doesn't work? And have you thought, well, what can I do? What else can I do?
I think the first thing to be very clear is that I and others are not anti-capitalist, anti-banks, anti any particular system. But we do need that system to be accountable and to listen to the evidence and the science. So I don't, it's not about dismantling something. It's about making that system that we have work for the people it should be serving.
The critical thing here is that what we're looking at is a longer term issue, aren't we? We're talking about something that's sort of, over the next 15, 20, 30 years, I mean, climate change is going to carry on, all right? But so the one thing is the long term, but equally, we need to make urgent changes to affect the long term solution. And of course, what keeps happening is we had COVID that derailed a lot of the focus on climate change. And now we've got the energy crisis that's potentially derailing attention away from the climate crisis rather than using it with the climate crisis and seeing the potential. And basically, these long-term issues, but that requires urgent current attention. We don't think that the governments is set up for dealing with that kind of thing. We think that now we should be having these citizens' assemblies, and we should be taking that responsibility out of the control of the governments who are linked to these networks of relationships with banks and fossil fuel industries and so on. And ordinary people coming up with some concrete ideas that actually will help deliver a longer term solution. So that's a really, really important thing, a part of XR and what we're really hoping we can help the government to unlock. Of course, that requires them to trust the people. And do they trust the people? That's the real question. Do they trust us? We're told to trust them, but do they trust us?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important point about whether our democracy and our government, and the same in many other countries as well, is becoming dysfunctional. And we really need to look at other ways of doing it. And in one sense, when you have an issue so important like this, I guess that's one way of doing it. you know, I mean, the climate emergency, we only have a short window of time to make a difference. And I mean, that is what is going, I think, to cause or to make more and more people want to go on the streets. What you're doing as a medic, I mean, how are you received by your fellow professionals, your fellow medics? I mean, do they agree with what you're doing, or is there opposition, David?
So I think people are aware of the you know, the issues and aware of the health, starting to get aware of the health impacts. I think the problem is that a lot of our colleagues are working jolly, jolly hard in a day-to-day job, trying to deliver quality healthcare and catch up from the COVID pandemic. And I think that some of them find it difficult to take on something additional to it. But and the other thing is that, generally speaking, you know, healthcare professionals are law-abiding, you know, conscientious kind of people. And so they find it difficult to break out of that box. But one of the really lovely jobs that I've been helping with recently is the admin role on Doctors for XR. And one of those is to respond to requests to join Doctors for XR. And it's absolutely delightful. Every time I take a role, there's two or three people almost every day that want to join Doctors for XR. And Doctors for XR is not just doctors, it's any healthcare professional. And it's so heartening to see people saying, this is, you know, got to join this.
I mean, it's quite interesting that, you know, when you did a protest outside of JP Morgan before, when XR did, I mean, the courts came down on your side. The judge found you not guilty. And in a way, to some extent, people think you may be relying on the courts, but the government might respond by becoming more and more repressive. And Maggie, are you worried at the time when we need that sort of protest, you're going to find more and more repressive governments?
It's really interesting to see that that there's been some criminal damage cases recently. The Colston 4, where they were found not guilty by a jury, has gone back to the Attorney General for review. It's really interesting to see that same Attorney General, there was a news article in The Guardian today, has taken quite a considerable amount of funding for her leadership campaign from the fossil fuel, from a, so it's a climate denying organisation. So that's quite interesting. So I think, yeah, there's some real threats to democracy if those corporations and banks can get their tentacles into government, and the governments then become solely concerned with what they think rather than what is best for the people, then yes, that's a real threat to democracy. I think the recent police acts, which are there to curtail protests, I think are very, very concerning. I think we need to wait and see what that means for us as people who, and what it means for our democratic right to protest. I was going to say, I don't think none of the police officers I've encountered, and I'm a white middle-class middle-aged woman, so my experience is as that, have shown any resentment towards policing a peaceful protest. So I think, you know, we all have a right to protest. That's our democratic right. And, you know, there are institutions that uphold that right. And once those things start getting, you know, little bits, bit by bit, they start being eroded, that's deeply, deeply worrying.
Well, I mean, you both have been very courageous and very eloquent in what you've been saying. But, you know, some people say that doctors and scientists and professionals have been quiet for too long and they're beginning to speak up now. Why do you think it's taken so long for a lot of them to speak up and, you know, put their head over the parapet, David.
That's an interesting one, isn't it? So when I reflect back, I remember we and my family went on a cycling holiday. This is when the children were a lot smaller, and talking to some other friends after church, and we were talking about the carbon impact of that compared to flying to Europe, and they said, "Oh well, we'll have the carbon that you save, so we can spend it." And that, what was interesting about me remembering that was that we were talking about it personally, a way back, maybe 10 years ago, but something about us actually bringing it out and finding an organization like AXAR that allows you to express that in a coherent way to bring it to the front. And I think that was perhaps the lack of a vehicle for us to actually talk about it. And that's what AXAR has done. It's given us that freedom and that body of people. And to be honest, I've met such absolutely fabulous people in AXAR. I've been on this journey of personal depth and challenge that I haven't experienced in years. So it's been a hard but a fabulous journey.
And Maggie, you want to say something?
A couple of points. So the Royal College of Nursing was founded by suffragettes. So mm-hmm. There's a history of activism within nursing. But also to agree with David, I joined Doctors XR having already joined my local Extinction Rebellion group. So I heard a talk given by Extinction Rebellion. Me and my husband went along and went, oh my goodness, it's that bad. It is that bad. And then I saw the Planetary Healthcare Hub during the October 2019 rebellion. Thought there's a load of doctors there, but I'm going to go and say hello. And they were really, really welcoming. And now we have physios, OTs, doctors, social prescribers, social workers, everybody is in that kind of family. And it's a considerate and an inclusive family who are thoughtful, discursive, but also quite challenging. We challenge each other as well. David, I'll pass to you.
Well, we're sort of come to the end, really, about half hour now. I mean, we've talked quite a lot about it, and I think we've been through a number of areas. But I think, David, maybe if I could ask you finally, I mean, if anybody wanted to find out more about what you're doing and how they could get in touch and maybe how they could get involved, how would they do it?
Yeah, so just Google Doctors for Extinction Rebellion. I'm sure you'll come up with our website, and it gives you details there about how to join. We're a broad church in terms of healthcare professionals and people working in the NHS. So yeah, we'd love to have more people. So there's this theory about we need 3.5% of the population involved in activism in some way to bring about social change. I worked out that's 47,000 people who work in the NHS. We haven't got that many in Doctors for XR yet. In fact, we would love to get 1,000 on the bridge. We've now actually got 1,000 on our mailing list, and it's growing all the time. So 47,000 is coming because people are realizing, people are joining, and people are realizing. And Francis, just that other you mentioned there about the increasing authoritarianism and repression. I'm deeply concerned if this crisis grows, the energy crisis grows, and everything else, we'll have more authoritarianism, fascism growing in the future. And it'll be really, really tough. We need to stand up now alongside people in the unions and other ones to say, no, you cannot clamp down on us, and we will resist you squashing our freedoms. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you both for that. I mean, that was a good way to end on the note of fear for the future, but a clarion call for hope at the same time. And that really is important. And you covered a lot of areas. You know, you've talked about the crisis of climate change, the involvement of medics, the way in which investment goes into fossil fuels from the banks and having to do something about it, and how our democracy and the way it is structured now is inadequate to respond to that, and that we have to find different ways. So there is a lot of food for thought on what you've said. So, you know, thank you for joining us and for the courage you've shown And, we'll end this interview now.